Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Sutta uvacha. Dharmyam nyayam sakarunam. Nirvyalikam samam mahat. Raja Dharma Suto Ragya Prajanandad Vacho Dvijaha Suto Uvacha Dharmyam Nyayam Sakarunam Nirvyalikam Samam Mahat Raja Dharma Suto Ragya Pratyananda Dvacho Dvijaha Suta Uvacha. Suta Goswami said, Dharmyam. In accordance with the principles of religion. Nyayam. Justice. Sakarunam. Full of mercy. Nirvyalikam. Without duplicity in Dharma. Samam. Equity. Mahat. Glorious, Raja, the King, Dharma Sutaha, Son, Ragya, by the Queen, Prajanandat, supported, Vachaha, statements, Dvijaha, O Brahmanas, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Suta Goswami said, O Brahmanas, King Yudhishthira fully supported the statements of the Queen, which were in accordance with the principles of religion, and were justified, glorious, full of mercy and equity, and without duplicity. Purport, Maharaja Yudhishthira, who was the son of Dharmaraja or Yamaraja, fully supported the words of Queen Draupadi in asking Arjuna to release Ashwatthama. One should not tolerate the humiliation of a member of a great family. Arjuna and his family were indebted to the family of Drona Acharya, because of Arjuna's learning the military science from him. If ingratitude were shown to such a benevolent family, it would not be at all justified from the moral standpoint. The wife of Dronacharya, who was the half body of the great soul, must be treated with compassion, and she should not be put into grief because of her son's death. That is compassion. Such statements by Draupadi are without duplicity, because actions should be taken with full knowledge. The feeling of equality was there because Draupadi spoke out of her personal experience. A barren woman cannot understand the grief of a mother. Draupadi was herself a mother, and therefore her calculation of the depth of Kripi's grief was quite to the point. And it was glorious because she wanted to show proper respect to a great family. So, proper order in human society is not maintained just by force. That is for the lowest class of men, that they must be threatened with violence if they don't obey the law. Civilized human beings have a sense of responsibility, have a sense of gratitude to those who have given them what they have, their upbringing, their food and clothing, their education. For that, we should be grateful and feel an obligation to reciprocate. This is only civilized human nature. The Pandavas and their wife are the most civilized human beings, even when great violence has been done to them. And the Pandavas have suffered so much offense and attempts to even kill them over and over again from their enemies headed by Duryodhan. Still, they did not deviate from the civilized nature of having respect and having consideration as appropriate for everyone. This marks a cultured person. Brahmins and Kshatriyas must be like this. If Brahmins, so-called Brahmins and so-called Kshatriyas, are simply selfish, inconsiderate, ungrateful, then they're totally unqualified. Then they may be intellectual, and they may be powerful, but they're not civilized. A real Brahmin, a real Kshatriya, is a civilized person, a person who can feel gratitude, who can feel, can exercise, exhibit responsibility. And it's not that as Vaishnavas we're exempt from this. A Vaishnava should be the most responsible person, the most selfless person. We can perform our bhajana for our own salvation, but that is, although it's spiritual, it's still selfish. If we work for the benefit of others, if we sacrifice and tolerate for others, then we're much greater Vaishnavas. That's a much higher level of devotional service. This is the difference between one who is simply a bhajana nandi and one who is a goshtya nandi. The goshtya nandi is concerned even more for the spiritual advancement of others, even more than his own. How do you measure your own spiritual advancement anyway? People presume that they're qualified in various ways. But those presumptions are erroneous in many cases. Advancement in devotional service is not measured by your erudition or by your various skills, even by your ability to influence other people and accumulate prestige and power. This certainly is not the measurement of actual progress in devotional service. These are not the proper Vaishnava qualities: to be proud, to be manipulative, anyway, Vaishnava qualities are saintly. And so what is a qualification? Is honesty, humility, consideration? So Draupadi, she's a woman and is not expected to be of the highest character, but she's an unusual great woman. As has been mentioned already several times in the classes, it is so remarkable that she's forgiving the person who murdered five of her sons. Not actually, they're not all sons of Draupadi. One of them was. One of them was. They're five sons of the Pandavas by different women. Vindhya was the son of Yudhishthira and Draupadi. Are they all sons of Draupadi by the five Pandavas? Yeah, okay. They were all sons of Draupadi. Sorry. Still, that makes it even more remarkable. There are her own sons. They were all murdered by Ashwatthama. And she's thinking about how she has to show proper respect to Ashwatthama. Not how to get revenge. That is Vaishnava character. We, at least myself, I can't, you know, have a hard time forgiving anyone for a slight offense, for a slight transgression, a little bit of insult. We can learn from these examples. Therefore, we should read about the great devotees and their perfect character, something that we should strive for as an ideal, even if we cannot ever come up to that standard. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam, there is Shukadeva talks about Isha Anukata, and Sridhar Swami and then Jiva Goswami following him explains that means, actually, no, I'm sorry, Shukadeva himself says, Cha asya anuvarti nam. Cha asya anuvarti nam. Ishikata are the narrations about the Supreme Lord and his activities, but also asya anuvarti nam. Also those who are his devotees. We want Ishanukata also involves hearing about the great qualities and the great activities of the devotees of Krishna. Bhagavatam has much of that. There are descriptions of Krishna's own activities. 10th canto is full of that. And many avatars are described, avatars of Vishnu, over 30, that have some description of their activities and their instructions and their reciprocations with their devotees. But then a lot more of the content of the Bhagavatam is description of the activities of the devotees. Of this Hari Vamsha is the family of Lord Hari. There is the Hari Vamsha Upaparada. So Bhagavatam is full of narrations about Hari Vamsha. Hari Vamsha means the family of Hari. Krishna is appearing in the lunar dynasty, and his avatar Ram is appearing in the solar dynasty. So is Parashuram and other avatars. So in these two dynasties, the sun, the dynasty of the sun god and that of the moon god, constitute Hari Vamsha, the family of Lord Hari. These persons are special. Even the minor ones, even the ones who may have done something wrong, even Ashwatthama, who's done serious wrong, he is glorious because he's also part of this dynasty. He was a teacher of the dynasty. That's his connection. His father was a teacher, and he's now meditating in the forest to recover his spiritual status. Ashwatthama was, as we read at the end of this chapter, we're getting toward the end of the chapter, Ashwatthama is going to be punished by being exiled, not by being killed. And he's currently in exile, performing austerities. He may have begun those austerities with a sense of wanting to get revenge, but they are purifying him, and he will regain his original spiritual status. And in the future, he'll become the next Vyasadeva, in the next Manvantara. So Draupadi's just a woman, but she could, without being a big philosopher, she's speaking in Sanskrit, so I guess she knows Sanskrit grammar, but she's not, yeah, I was reciting Vedanta Sutra. She's talking in ordinary language, speaking common sense. But that common sense is able to recognize the greatness even of Ashwatthama. When we're dealing with Vaishnavas in our line are god brothers, god nephews, god uncles, aunts and sisters. We have to be very careful not to be offensive. Hare Krishna. Not to be inconsiderate and ungrateful. Hare Krishna. Even if a devotee has done serious wrong or has got some really serious wrong ideas and wrong attitudes, still we have to respect every Vaishnava, especially every Vaishnava in our line. We have to respect them for their having attempted, at least, to dedicate their life to the service of Srila Prabhupada. Even if they failed to do that, to continue doing that their whole life, even if they fell away, they, for some time at least, tried to give themselves and their whole life to Srila Prabhupada. For that, a person should deserve all respect, all consideration, no matter what he says and does. We don't, you know, the other side is to be too lax. There's, you know, the right side when you're too strict, and the left side when you're too, you're ignoring the principles and letting people do nonsense in the name of being tolerant. So we should not tolerate transgressions, but we have to forgive the transgressors. Hate the sin, not the sinner. And especially when dealing with Vaishnavas, if we are capable of doing it, we should try to correct them, not condemn them. We, going out and preaching, going to sinful materialists who are breaking all the laws of God, and we're trying to show them compassion, and then when there's a Vaishnava who's doing some sin, but nothing as bad as most of the non-devotees, then we become indignant. That's inconsistent. Where's your compassion? You have the compassion for the non-devotees, but not for the devotees? Preaching also means to help the devotees who are in trouble, not just the outsiders. Preaching is for the inside also. It's not required in Vaikuntha, where nobody falls into Maya, but it is required here in the material world, where the influence of Maya is so strong, and even good devotees get into trouble. So we should be considerate to them and compassionate and try to help them if they're having trouble. Easy to say. You know, I had to agree to give class today. It's my turn. And talk is cheap. I can say these things, but to actually live them is very hard. Hare Krishna. What time is it? I don't have my watch here. 7 o'clock. Okay. Anyway, any questions or comments? Yes. Yeah. Vishnu Kantapura.
You mentioned that if we see any, I mean, in us and in others also, if we see anything wrong, we have to correct them. But
if we see anything wrong, we have to correct it. Not necessarily. Sometimes it's not our business, or nothing we can do, or it's just going to cause us disturbance, and we're not going to accomplish anything. So it's not a rule that you should always try
to
correct.
As far as I understand, it is unless we are the authority of the other person, even if he commits whatever mistake, we don't have any right to ask him.
Oh, again, I don't agree with that. You know, sometimes, even if you're not an authority, you're somebody's friend, and we should be friends to all the devotees.
Is an exceptional case. If he's a friend...
No, but we should consider all the devotees our friends.
But he may not consider the same thing. He may think that who is this person who is trying to correct me like that.
Okay.
So if there is a proper harmony between both, then on the basis of that love, I mean, some friendship, we can try to just request him something. We cannot still demand that you should do this in the proper way. Like,
yes.
Isn't it right?
Yes.
So even otherwise, in a larger context, it is always better to approach the authority of that person if he has an authority. I mean, if he is abiding by his authority, and then say the problem, and then that person should take care of this. Is it what I understand that?
I think it depends on the circumstances. Sometimes it makes good sense to approach the devotee and talk to him face to face, you and him. If you have some kind of relationship, positive relationship, just use it. It doesn't all have to be done bureaucratically.
But what happens generally, even if we have good relationship, everybody has some amount of ego in them, and they feel that
ego.
Why should anybody come and tell me anything? I mean, this person, okay, I am his friend, but he doesn't have any right to correct me or change me.
Well, that's not real friendship then. That's shallow friendship.
Yeah. Shallow friendship, yeah. Real friendship is very rare to see now. I mean, in this
age. But that's a commodity we should be trying to develop. It's not easily produced, but it's very valuable.
Yeah, in the ideal
life. You know, it may be hard to, something may be very rare and hard to produce, but once you can make some, you can sell it for a good price. Yeah, it's worth $2,000 an ounce, then go to the trouble to make it. So real friendship is so valuable, it's worth the trouble to develop it.
Yeah, in the ideal case, it should be there, but nowadays everybody, I mean, it, because of the conditioning, because of different culture and so many different things.
We should rise above that. We have the power of the holy name and the mercy of Prabhupada and the other Vaishnavas. We should rise above these material conditions and act like, and act and think like Vaishnavas. And that means, it's got to mean how we deal with one another as well as how we deal with everybody else, how we deal with Krishna, how we deal with the outside. What about how we deal with the other devotees? That's an important part of being a Vaishnava.
Yeah, that's
not
true.
Just chanting our rounds and doing this and doing that externally, following the rules. This also means becoming a decent human being.
The easiest way is to, the authority can correct him or do something to him, isn't it?
There are different ways to help people. Sometimes it's done by authority and sometimes it's done by an equal or even an inferior. Sometimes. The inferior person can help his superior if he does it properly. Is that okay? Okay, I guess Damodar had his hand first. Then. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't catch. Bart Ramprabhu.
You said that this compassion has to be given more than to the outsiders amongst the devotees. There has to be relationships of compassion. But sometimes even neglect itself is a way of giving compassion.
Sometimes. But it's considerate neglect. It's neglect as a strategy, not that I don't give a damn about the person. I do care, but I'm going to show my care by not flattering him and not indulging him in his nonsense.
Yes. There was one case in Bangalore. There was a devotee. He was he was there for 18 years. He was not exactly initiated or something like that, but he was around. He was just hanging around with the devotees, and he was coming to the temple, listening to lectures and all this.
Yes.
For 18 years, he was like that, and still he could not give up eating in restaurants and eating onion and garlic and things like that.
Yeah.
So there was another very senior devotee. He told him, "Maharaj, I'm from 18 years practicing. I'm not able to give this onion and garlic," and this Maharaj, he didn't giving compassion in the sense that you try to give up. He didn't say anything like that. He didn't even speak to him. He just walked away.
Oh.
And then he felt really disturbed, and then he ran after Maharaj. What should I do? So he didn't speak, and he was just silent. And then he tried to ask him again and again, and then he said, "See, from 18 years, you must have heard from so many spiritual authorities. Now, I don't think that me speaking to you will make any change." He said he completely, you know, gave him a disappointing answer. And then because of that neglect, this person, he's there in Bangalore, and he recovered, and that alerted his spiritual sense from inside, that neglect.
Yes.
So he gave up from that day on, he gave up things like that.
But that was just externally hard.
Yes.
The devotee who did that was actually concerned.
Yes.
On the inside. Because if you act like that when you don't care about somebody, it won't have the same effect.
Thank you. Since
we're speaking about the subject of correcting others, I have an understanding a little bit of the history of ISKCON. I think I might be very erroneous in my understanding.
Yes.
But it seems that in the past, they're very strict amongst, well, there was this mood of like strictness and a little bit of like fanatism, not fanatism, but like strictness.
Yes. Can you describe that?
Like strict attendance to the program, like to.
But Prabhupada was like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Strict in that way, like you're supposed to come to the program.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If someone didn't show up in Bhavanam class, Prabhupada would be quite upset.
And also you hear say, like, for Mangalarti, he was, I mean, I guess it was not always followed, because he was also disappointed often, Prabhupada, and sometimes in the attendance.
Yes, yes.
But it seems that devotees were strict, like they would often chastise, like the senior, I hear like the story, stories that people were not shy of chastising one another, and there was this culture of rectification, and devotees understood that.
Yes.
And it seems that it was like not well applied, because many people got fried, it seems. And now it's like on the other side of the scale.
Maybe in some cases. Some cases, not in all situations.
Yeah.
It wasn't misapplied always.
Yeah.
I mean, in some cases, devotees were trained up seriously, and they prospered. You know, they made spiritual advancement. No?
Yeah, it seems like I see sometimes some lackness in giving discipline in,
yes,
I mean in like some authorities.
I think because nowadays, comparatively, there's less respect for authority.
Yeah,
you know, so the authority can't exert itself because it's not being respected as much.
Yeah,
because senior devotees fell down, a lot of devotees went outside. So that undermined the sense of respect for authority. And so, that's lower now than it was 20 years ago.
Because you would hear like, devotees, oh, he's six, like, they would join the movement, and, okay, this devotee is senior to me, he joined two months before me.
Yeah.
That was, like, the culture when people would join.
Yes.
And they were accepting authority like that. But I guess that's a big impediment for our progress of a movement, that people are losing faith in the authority.
Yeah, that has to be rectified, but it's not like you just demand. You have to earn it, earn the respect.
Show that there's proper authority. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's hard to regain that lost trust, but it has to be done. Otherwise, it's hard to maintain discipline when people don't respect the authorities. Whatever.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, in this part of Bhagavatam, Ashwatthama punished by Pandavas. Draupadi acting like a Vaishnava, but there is a Bhima, so he is also a Vaishnava.
Yes.
all Pandavas are pure duodin.
Yes, and Bhima too. Yeah,
but those, confusing between Bhima and Draupadi, they have different opinion.
Yeah. Well, Bhima wants to see justice done. He's thinking not about Ashwatthama's mother is going to cry. He's not thinking about that. He's thinking about how Ashwatthama should go to hell for what he's done. And we should kill him to save him from going to hell. That's what he's thinking.
Is that wrong?
No. Krishna said, you should satisfy Bhima and Draupadi. They're both right. That's what Krishna tells Arjuna. He didn't say ignore Bhima and listen to Draupadi. He said listen to both of them. And somehow figure it out. Do both. See that justice is done and also be compassionate. Both. That was Arjuna's dilemma. He had to satisfy both Bhima and Draupadi. Krishna told him to.
Arjuna is greater than Bhima or Draupadi, or what?
Arjuna is which, I'm sorry?
Arjuna is greater than Bhima or Draupadi?
Well, there are different opinions about that. Madhvacharya thinks that Bhima is the greatest devotee in the whole Mahabharata. Madhvacharya.
Because he himself.
Well, yes.
Because he himself.
He's his brother, yeah. Anyway, for whatever reason, that's it. That's his opinion. Some devotees may think that Arjuna is the best of the Pandavas. They're each great in their own ways.
Because Bhima is
they're individuals. They're each very, very great in their own ways. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Narada is comparing different devotees and trying to find out who's the best, he was sent by, I think, Hanuman to go meet the Pandavas. He didn't say which one of them was the best. All five of them were better than himself, he thought, Hanuman thought. Because Hanuman, what was the difference? Anyway, Pandavas were considered better than Hanuman, by Hanuman. Then the Pandavas said that we think that the Krishna's devotees in Dwarka are better. And then Narada went to them and they said, well, among us, the best is Uddhava. But I don't see a description. Someone saying, at least there, Narada being told that one of the Pandavas is better than the others. Yeah. But they're each great for different reasons. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Something else? Yes. Damodar.
We have to stop. There's one statement here. In the purport, such statements by Draupadi are without this duplicity because actions should be taken with full knowledge.
Oh, that's an interesting statement. Okay. What is that supposed to mean?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's why I'm asking.
I'm not sure how those two ideas go together. Draupadi's statements are without duplicity. That's in the verse. Nirvilikam. What does it have to do with actions being taken with full knowledge? Whose action? Arjuna's? Well, if someone is duplicitous, you can't get proper information from someone who's lying to you. You want reliable information. You have to get it from someone who doesn't deceive. You have to have a reliable, honest source to get proper information. Arjuna has to understand, what am I supposed to do? And so Krishna, Draupadi, and Bhima are giving Arjuna their opinions of what he should do. They each have a different opinion. If they were pulling his leg, lying to him, just trying to manipulate him by deceiving him, then their opinions wouldn't be reliable. But the opinions of all three are reliable because each one of them is without duplicity. Bhima has a hard opinion. Krishna also did, kill him. But there was no duplicitousness in their opinions either. They were being honest. Their honest opinion, what should be done, is kill him. If someone's going to be not quite honest with you, then you can't trust his, you know, the information he gives you. And what is Arjuna supposed to do? He needs useful advice. So he needs to get it from those who are not duplicitous. Okay, and that's what I can make of it. All right. What time is it? It's time. Sorry. Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.